Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go. Welcome to a very special edition of the BBP, the Bengals Beat Podcast, as it is time for the NFL Draft Spectacular Pod. Here is the third year that I've done the Draft Spectacular, where you get to stop hearing opinions from myself and Jim Lasarski, and hear from some of the draft experts, the gurus that are out there and talking specifically about Bengals-related draft analysis and issues. So I got a great trio for you this year, starting off third straight year, because he just does fantastic work with CBS Sports, NFL Draft Scout. His draft guide is incredible. You're talking as 450 different players, analysis, everything you could possibly want to know. Any guy gets drafted, you can go in there and get all the information. He's got that available if you want to pick it up. Link is on the blog. But Dane Brugler from CBS Sports is going to be my first guest. A lot of great talk with him. You'll enjoy that. Second guest, Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus, who, you know, those guys have jumped headfirst into the college draft game. The last couple of years, they've taken everything they do, scouting every player on every play in the NFL, grades. I mean, any kind of deep dive analytics that you're looking for happening in football right now, they do it, and they did it with all the Power 5 teams, and then, of course, then kept taking a deeper look at some of the bigger prospects, even from small schools. Sam and his group put out a book this year with, I mean, as incredible amount of analytics. You can also pick that up, again, link on the blog if you want to take a look at that. It's fantastic work. He comes on, and we get into a lot of really interesting ins and outs of what the Bengals are looking, what actually you're seeing on this tape. What are the Bengals coaches looking at when they go through these receivers? What are they seeing out there, and who's maybe underrated, who's overrated, and things of that nature. In concluding, our third guest, Doug Farrar from Sports Illustrated, who he does a great job. He's counting down his top 50 right now, almost down to the end. He had some interesting pieces in there. We have a really good conversation about Jalen Smith out of Notre Dame. Of course, the Bengals with the history of taking players coming off injuries, not being afraid to draft a redshirt player. He talks about how he thinks Jalen Smith could be the best player in this draft before his injury. Who will want to give up value and when to do that, to take a shot on him is going to be really interesting. We kind of get into that conversation if the Bengals could be in that mix. It'll be one of the fun topics of really the entire draft until he goes. So that's your lineup. Your lineup is set. You can stop hearing from me. Make sure, again, you subscribe on iTunes. We're on Google Play. Make sure you pick up the Bengals app if you don't have it. All the news in the offseason comes directly to you in your pocket. We're buzzing you if Tyler Eifert gets his fifth-year option, if Marvin Lewis gets extended and all you want to cry. We've got it all for you. Coming right to your pocket so you know. You don't need to come find the news. We'll bring it to you. So anyway, you're going to want that come draft time, because we're going to be cranking out a whole lot of content, and I'm probably not going to sleep much, but I'll get over it. Let's go. We're going to open it up, hitting the first of our three experts, Dane Brugler of CBSSports.com, and enjoy it. All right, here we go, kicking off our NFL Draft Spectacular podcast. Back again for the second straight year from CBSSports.com, NFL Draft Scout, the senior NFL Draft Analyst there, Dane Brugler. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, great to have you on. First of all, congratulations on the draft guide. It is incredible. Again, 450-plus prospects. For anybody listening to this, make sure you go to the blog and check the link there. And if you, anything you could possibly want to know about a guy that's been drafted, you can go in there and know a lot about every player immediately. Great work on that team.
Well, I appreciate it. That's really is my baby, something I work on year-round. So the feedback has been fantastic. It's been fun to share it with everyone.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And leafing through, I want to start everybody's starting with the Bengals and talking about receivers, and that has been gone through ad nauseum here in Cincinnati. But I want to go a little bit into what the strength of this draft is, because there's spots where they could definitely hit the Bengals, particularly in the first two or three rounds, and that's the defensive line, particularly defensive interior. You know, Bengals looking to add rotational guys in. They run a 4-3. Let's just talk day one and early day, first, second round defensive line guys. Who sticks out to you, somebody that is an ideal disruptive type of fit that could be around, say, in the 20s in the first round and beyond that?
And I think the Bengals, where they're picking, and you look at the needs on the roster, I think they're set up well because we probably won't have a top 10 wide receiver this year, and we probably won't have a top 10 defensive tackle either. And so the sweet spot for those two positions are going to be probably between 15 and 50. And so I think they're in a good spot in that late first round. They'll have their choice if they want to go either direction and get one of the top players on the board. You look at defensive tackle, depending on what you want, obviously, certain scheme fits play the part, but say the Bengals want to go with a nose or, a traditional one technique, then, this draft has it. A'shaun Robinson from Alabama, it would fit that mold. Jerron Reed from Alabama, same type of thing. Andrew Billings from Baylor, he's in that conversation. Kenny Clark from UCLA. I think all are in that late first round discussion, and you can make a case why that should be the pick for the Bengals in the first round. But even if they say they go wide receiver in the first round, there's still good value in the second round, depending on who could fall to them. I actually just recently did a 7-round mock draft, and I had the Bengals taking Austin Johnson in the second round, Penn State defensive tackle, which they've drafted defensive tackles out of Penn State in the past, so it would fit this year as well. I think that'd be excellent value for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the fact that we've heard so much about how deep this is, almost a generationally good defensive tackle class, things like that. But it's really is there a lot of fines can be happening in those in day two and three, really too. Where does the depth, like, when you talk about that position in particular? I mean, you've got that, you mentioned 15 to 50 and kind of in that area, but as far as the depth and picking up some steals later in the draft, does that kind of also play parallel with the fact that there's the first round guy?
Yeah, I think so. And, I think that the 15 to 50, that's the sweet spot. We could see double digit defensive tackles drafted in that range. But if you look at the second, third, fourth round, there's going to be players available that can come in and make an impact. Javon Hargrave from South Carolina State, he's probably going to be available in the third round. A player like DJ Reader from Clemson, late third, early fourth, he would be that nose or that one technique that would make a lot of sense. Matt Ioannidis from Temple, he had a great Senior Bowl and really made a case for the top 100. And you can go into day three. There's a lot of, quote unquote sleepers or, guys that are flying under the radar that could be good pickups. Greg Milhouse from Campbell is one of them. David Onyemata from Manitoba, from Canada. He's a guy getting some looks. Darius Latham from Indiana has some character concerns. So he's going to be a second or third round talent who could be available in the sixth or seventh round. Possibly. So I think this defensive tackle class, whether you need a three technique, whether you need a nose, whether you need a versatile guy that can play different positions, this defensive tackle class really has everything. And you could point to every round and point to a player that would make sense.
Yeah. We talked at the combine with defensive coordinator Paul Gunther, and he said, I want pass rushers. I want guys that can cover, and I want guys that can rush the passer. And the Bengals have Carlos Dunlap and Michael Johnson currently starting, but behind them are a couple of draft picks that haven't flourished yet. Marcus Hunt, Will Clark are there, have not taken that next level of production. Let's talk straight 4-3 defensive end, rush the passer only. Just pretty much focus on that. Who are we talking about in this draft, a guy that could fit that kind of mold for this defense?
Yeah, in the late first round, I think there are a few names that would make sense. Kevin Dodd from Clemson, he got his opportunity to start this past year opposite Shaq Lawson, and you could tell as the season wore on and, he received more and more snaps, you could see that light bulb, starting to illuminate and get brighter, and he started to figure things out. And he had a terrific college football playoff, especially against Alabama, and really stood out and put himself in that top 40 conversation. But I mentioned I just did a 7-round mock, and I had wide receiver first round, then I had Austin Johnson in the second round. But then in the third round, I had the Bengals going back to that Penn State well and picking up Carl Nassib in the third round. He would fit that 4-3 defensive end mold, a guy that he didn't start a game in his high school or college career until this past year as a senior, and he blew up 19.5 tackles for loss, 15.5 sacks. He's a top 75 player, but it wouldn't shock me at all if he's there in the third round for the Bengals. And I think he'd be a great pickup who could provide instant depth and potentially be a starter down the line.
Yeah, you talk about Nassib. I mean, he's a guy that fits the Bengals. They love the tall, thick defensive ends. He comes in at almost 6'7". He would say that the Bengals have a basketball team, a defensive end, and he could come in and play power forward for them. You mentioned receivers, and it would be we would be remiss to not talk that, because it's going to be the number one priority in the draft of the Bengals. Let's the glut that's there of Corey Coleman, Will Fuller, Josh Dotson, we can even throw Treadwell into the mix, depending on what happens with him, teams viewing his slow 40 time. That area, Michael Thomas, throw him in there from Ohio State. Who do you like out of that group, and who do you think maybe would be a good fit to play opposite an AJ Green?
Well, and personally, Laquon Treadwell is by far the best receiver in this draft, in my opinion. I think what he brings to the offense is just unmatched in this class. So I would be surprised if he's still there, but you never know because of a lot of teams' obsession with the 40-yard dash times. You just never know. But in my mock, I have the Bengals going Josh Doctson. I really like that fit. With A.J. Green on one side, Dawson on the other, he has the body control, the ball skills. When the ball is in the air, it's a thing of beauty just watching Dawson track the ball, go up and get it, and just to find a way to complete passes. And, nothing against Trevon Boykin, but Josh Dawson understands how to make inaccurate quarterbacks look like precision passers with his targets. And so I think he's a very talented pass catcher, a guy who – doesn't know the full route tree just yet coming from that TCU offense, but what he does right now with his catch radius and catching anything in his zip code, he'll continue to develop the routes and develop as a wide receiver. But what he brings to the field right now, to me, is worth a late first round pick, and I think it'd be a great value for the Bengals.
Yeah, let's talk about Michael Thomas from Ohio State. There's been a lot of buzz around here about him. And, you see he has some of these plays, what he did to Fuller, Virginia Tech, some stuff that should just be illegal. And you've seen him make some of those plays. Some people, some people have him as the number one receiver on their board even. What do you make of his game and what he projects to in the league?
Yeah, and there's quite a bit to like about Michael Thomas. I've got him in the late first. I think he's one of the top four receivers in this draft. Obviously has the bloodlines as the nephew of Keyshawn Johnson, but he just watches film and you can't help but be impressed. 6'3", 217 pounds, and his ability as a detailed route runner, it's really beneficial for him at the top of route to create space and then give his quarterback a clear target. That Ohio State offense wasn't a pass-first offense. They were they look to run the ball first and foremost, but Michael Thomas was still able to have 54 catches, at least 54 catches the last 2 years. To me, Michael Thomas is a better overall prospect than Devin Smith last year, the other Ohio State wide receiver who was taken in the 30s last year's draft, early second round. So I think Michael Thomas, he's going to be a good value in that late first, early second round, wherever he ends up. From the size, the athleticism, he's not a burner. He's not, you know, he reminds me a little bit of DeAndre Hopkins in that type of mold, where he's a good size receiver with a catch radius who might not be a burner, but he knows how to get open and knows how to create once he has the ball.
Yeah, be interesting to see if there's a receivers available there. The possibility of, hey, maybe you could still get him and move back a couple of spots if you're sitting like the Bengals at 24 and rack up a couple, maybe a mid-round pick to go with it. We've seen the Bengals move back a number of times in the past. They don't like moving up. And ever since the Kajana Carter, so we haven't seen him move up, but moving back's not a thing that they're opposed to, so that might be an option that we see. Dane, again, thanks for joining me. Great work, as always, with the draft, guys. Fantastic. I guarantee you I will be using it on draft night, and certainly when we get into the fifth, sixth, and seventh rounds, and I need to start going through those pages in a hurry to find whoever gets taken and get some details out there. But so, everybody, go check that out. Dane, thanks again for joining me.
Anytime. I appreciate it.
All right, as we roll on in our BBP NFL draft spectacular, I am pumped to bring in Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus. We've featured a lot of their content over the years, and they're getting bigger and bigger. Even have a lot of home of their business right here in Cincinnati. So pumped to have Sam on with us. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, anytime. Good to be here.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about some of these. As you guys, first of all, you have your scouting book. I mean, you talk about content that goes beyond content. You guys kind of flipped over for everything you guys were doing as far as grading every player and every play of every game in the NFL, moved it on to college. What was it like taking on that task for you guys, and were you surprised at some of the information that you guys were able to uncover?
Yeah, 2014 was the first year we started doing college, so we were a little bit in the swing of things this year, had a better understanding of what it all took, but it's the sheer volume of games and things that happens in college that's the big challenge, or was the big challenge for us getting PFF college off the ground and running. And then once you get into it, it's just the same kind of data again, and it's just interesting seeing how some of the stuff translates. So last draft was the first draft where we got to see guys that had graded really well versus, you know, the kind of consensus big boards out there, you know. So everybody had Leonard Williams at the top of their board, and Leonard Williams graded really well for us. But we were saying things like, well, what about this guy, Henry Anderson from Stanford, who graded better than Leonard Williams, and everybody saw as like a mid-round pick. We were sort of saying, you know, why is this guy not seen as this can't-miss prospect? He actually had some pretty good measurables as well. And interestingly, over that first rookie season, before he got injured about halfway through the year, Henry Anderson and Leonard Williams were grading pretty much the same. Those two guys were both having really good rookie seasons. So I think it's interesting. It's going to be interesting going forward to see how much of this PFF grading is directly translatable to NFL success early on.
Yeah, that's what I was curious, if how much of that you saw of guys that maybe you mentioned the consensus boards that are out there, and maybe people that you saw as grades that, wow, these guys are way better. Did you see a lot of teams drafting those guys higher than maybe some of the, you know, when you see that everyone says, oh, they're reaching for that guy at one, maybe it was guys that you guys had graded really well. Did you notice that happening even last year and then seeing it play out?
Yeah, there's a few guys I think that we like that went a bit higher last year than people were projecting them. I think there's probably going to be some more this year as well. It's difficult to tell how much of that is, you know, NFL teams just doing a better job than sort of the media, Twitter, you know, that kind of thing. Everybody, it's you know, a lot of people are doing their own analysis and, you know, coming to their conclusions on players, and it might not match up with how the NFL sees these guys. You know, we're all saying player X is a fifth round guy. The NFL teams might see him as a third round guy, and you're not going to know that until you get round to the draft and they take him in the third. But I think there's definitely some guys that we liked that got drafted high. There's also some guys that we didn't like that probably slipped a bit. And then there's the ones, I think the interesting ones are where we differ completely. The ones that we think, you know, this guy is not a good pick and he still gets taken pretty high, or this guy is a steal and he goes low still and potentially works out. I think those are the really interesting guys. Last year, we really did not like Bud Dupree, who went in the first round and everybody was saying was a clear fire first round pick. We were saying, look, this guy has no production in college. He does not grade well. He's probably a third round guy based on measurables alone. And the Steelers took him in high in the first, and he didn't really perform as a rookie. So that's another interesting one.
Yeah. Well, let's take all that of what we saw and let's flip it forward to what is coming up this year. And really every conversation about the Bengals in this draft is going to revolve around wide receiver. And I think the grades that we've seen and the rankings that we've seen, you got recently the PFF Top 150 came out. Make sure you go to ProFootballFocus.com and check that out. It has some interesting dynamics on receiver that are different than what we've seen from a lot of the consensus. And what we've heard all along is it's not a good draft for receivers, and heard that across the board. But yet, if we look counting them down here in the top, we have eight in the top 40, including two in the top 10. And I'll just run down the line of where they're ranked on the overall top 150 of the board right now. Corey Coleman from Baylor at 9, Josh Dotson, TCU at 10, and then Sterling Shepard from Oklahoma at 23, Mike Thomas from Ohio State at 24, and we get all the way down to 28, so we have Laquon Treadwell from Ole Miss, who has been talked about as one of these top guys. Then a name that we see popping up now more and more at 35, Leonte Carew from Rutgers, and the other Michael Thomas from Southern Miss at 38, and Rashard Higgins from Colorado at 40. You look at that, let's start with Coleman and Dotson being so high. What was it about them and what you saw in their grades and to put them up so high where we just haven't seen a lot of those two, of anybody really, up there in the top 10 from this receiver class?
Obviously, the first thing is PFF grading. Those guys both had really excellent grades last year, play-by-play stuff. When you start going down into the tape, I think they're the two best on tape as well. Coleman, this is a receiver class that I don't think has a huge amount of speed and explosion and, you know, physical gifts like that. And Coleman's the guy that has all of that. He can eat up cushions from defensive backs in a heartbeat. He's got such quick twitch ability and the kind of burst off the line that most of these guys don't have. And when you look at the production he had, even in that Baylor system, it was just ludicrous. It was, you know, a completely different level to most guys. I think he's well worth the pick. And, you know, he didn't really, that production didn't really die off until Baylor went down to like their fourth string quarterback and were essentially running the single wing to end out the season. But also, he kind of measured bigger than I think everybody was expecting, too. He came in, you know, not quite 6 foot, but just under it. He's not a small receiver. He's a solid guy. And I think he's got this run after the catch skills, the ability to win before the catch. He gets separation at a higher rate than anybody else we charted. And I just think you add all those things in together. Really, the only question mark on him is expanding his route tree, because Baylor essentially just run four routes. He runs wide receiver screens, slants, hitches, and goes, and pretty much nothing else. So he'll obviously need to do more than that at the NFL, but there's nothing in his route running that says he can't do that. He runs pretty sophisticated routes, even if it's a very limited tree. So I don't see a huge problem with him translating for that. Dotson's another guy who, when you just put him on quickly and have a look at him, nothing really stands out, but then you watch further and, you know, watch a bit longer, and he does all the things that people want Laquon Treadwell to do, which is win at the catch point and take balls away from defensive backs, win these contested catches, make some spectacular plays as the ball arrives. I think that's really what he's best at, is the play when the ball is in the air. You know, there's a play that I put on Twitter recently where I think it was against West Virginia, and Terrell Chestnut, who had him really well covered down in the red zone, the ball got put up in the air early, and just the last 5 yards, Dotson just burst through, got a couple of yards of separation, and hauled it in for a touchdown at the back of the end zone. When that ball got put up, it looked like there was no way he'd ever make that play. But he's able to do that in a way most guys in this class aren't.
Yeah. An interesting guy is Sterling Shepard. In the first mock draft that I did, I had him going to the Bengals, but that was at the 55 pick. There's a lot of thought that he wouldn't be out there, and certainly your grades would suggest that he would be there. And in fact, your grades suggest he won't be there when the Bengals pick in the first round at 24. There's talk because he's smaller. There's talk of him not being able to he can play inside and out, but he's more of probably a slot guy. But he showed at Oklahoma in his production that he can do both. And is he sort of the talk of the reincarnation of Tyler Lockett? Do you see that in him?
Yeah, there's definitely something in that. He incidentally was the highest graded receiver in the entire nation this year for us. So, and the thing you do need to work out is when you look at him is, can he play outside as well, or is he strictly a slot guy? I don't have a big problem with a guy being strictly a slot guy, but I think that does put a definite cap on a guy's value in terms of how high you take him in the draft. But he does play outside, and he doesn't show anything to say that he won't be able to do that at the next level. Now, I don't think he's going to be able to do it every down at the next level. You know, he can't just be an outside receiver, but he can be one of those receivers the way Seattle used theirs, where they line them up in the slot or out wide, and they'll move them all over the place and have them play multiple different receiver spots. I think he can do that at the next level and succeed in all, you know, in every position that he lines up in. He's quick, he's fast, he's got a bit of strength to him. He's not just this small, frail guy that needs holes in the zones. He can work his way through contact and some traffic, and he'll go and get the ball in tough situations, you know, some ugly places that contact is going to happen. He'll make those plays. So about the only thing I don't think he's going to do consistently is match up to heavy press coverage on the outside, you know, running deep down the field, that kind of thing. But I think he's a very good receiver and worth a first round pick if you run a lot of three wide receiver type formations.
Yeah. What you have, those are some of the guys you have at the top and maybe higher than some drafted. One person that stuck out to me that I found all the way down at 71 was Will Fuller, who from Notre Dame, who's the fastest guy in this class. We see a lot of mock drafts have projected him to go in that 22 to 24 range. The wide receiver needy trio that's out there of Houston, Minnesota, Cincinnati. You have him down at 71. I'm curious what your grade showed when you were looking at Fuller and why he's not up around the eight that are up there in that top 40 for you guys.
Yeah, we're not as high on Will Fuller as everybody else. Part of it is drops. You know, he has a lot of drops over the past couple of years. I think he's in double digits for both of the past two seasons, which is not ideal. Yeah, 11 drops last year, 10 drops this year. So I don't think his hands are great. I think is fairly limited in terms of what he can do. He's a very fast receiver and a very good deep threat, but even then, it's only all speed. It's not like he's going to go and win those jump balls or those contested catches deep down the field. So you really do need to pair him with an offense that attacks deep regularly and has a quarterback that can get the ball out there, as opposed to one that'll put it out, but it might not be where it needs to be. It's going to let the DB back into the play and make it more of a contested catch. I just think I think personally that people are overrating his speed a little, or the impact that his speed can have. You know, Mike Wallace and Ted Ginn, those guys are blazing fast as well, but essentially they're one-trick ponies in the NFL, and that hasn't proven to be too valuable. Mike Wallace was really valuable when he was in Pittsburgh, and he had Ben Roethlisberger as his quarterback, a guy who could consistently hit him with those deep passes. But as soon as he left and he went to Miami and in Minnesota, and quarterbacks that aren't really as good at doing that, he became, you know, a marginal guy, a guy that's being moved on and not really a fit for the offense. And Ted Ginn is a guy who's bounced around on the periphery of rosters until he found a quarterback in Cam Newton that was prepared to heave a deep to him with regularity, and a team that was prepared to live with the drops that he would inevitably have because the plays that he makes to offset that are worth it. So I think Fuller is a similar kind of player to those two guys in that he's a limited receiver. His main asset is speed and the ability to win deep, but it's not necessarily, it requires, I think, a match in an offense. If you can get him in a team like Arizona or Carolina or even Pittsburgh, if you can match him with the right offense, I think he becomes a very, very dangerous weapon. But there aren't that many of those in the NFL.
Yeah. And I certainly, you know, for those listening to this podcast, I certainly wouldn't put the Bengals amongst those. They need the person opposite AJ DeGreen to be a whole lot more versatile than just being able to be a one-trick pony running deep. But I want to let you out of here. But first, I want to jump on one other quick topic. I think the Bengals are going to be looking to replenish the rotation on their defensive line, and I want to run through some of the first day, maybe some sneak into the second day, these defensive tackles. We're talking about, they love the idea. Domantas Peko, who's aging on the last year of his contract, 32, is they need a guy to come in and take over for him in a year. They're going to want to get him into that rotation this year, playing next to Geno Atkins, and between him and Carlos Dunlap or him and Michael Johnson, that he needs to be a run-stuffing lateral 4-3 interior defensive lineman. Of some of those that are there in the first rounds, you run down names like Sheldon Rankins, Chris Jones, Jerron Reed, Andrew Billings, Jonathan Bullard, Vernon Butler, Sheldon Day, names like that. Who is the best fit in that mold? Run-stuffing, powerful, able to go lateral up and down the line and sort of be more of a disruptive complement to Geno Atkins?
I think the guy that you're describing there is Andrew Billings, the nose tackle from Baylor. He's not a traditional 3-4 nose tackle, you know, a two-gapping guy. Baylor had him playing on the move a lot, so they would slant their line, and he would move one way, and the defense would flow, and then fill gaps either side of him. So he would be a guy that could perfectly play that Peko role as the 4-3 nose tackle, but only playing one gap, moving sideline to sideline, moving on the run, and just collapsing the line. He's really powerful and has the ability to disrupt in a really major way. He, I think, would be a great fit for that kind of defense. Bullard from Florida, I think, would be a pretty good fit as well. And the other guy I think that's interesting is Jerron Reed, who might be the best run defending interior guy in this entire class, but he's more of a classic two gapping run, you know, stand up an offensive lineman and play the two gaps either side of him kind of guy, which is not necessarily what the Bengals do, but I think it might translate pretty well as that run stuffing complement.
Yeah. Real quick before you go, who is one guy that you've seen as a consensus people are not talking enough about from what you guys have seen in your grades and all the tape you guys have gone through?
I think there's a few of those guys. You know, there's a lot of them up at the very top of the draft, but some of them more further down. I really like Matt Ioannidis from Temple. He's a really disruptive defensive lineman. He's graded well for us as both a run stuffer and a pass rusher, and he's played all over that Temple D-line. I think he's probably best as either a 3-tech or as a kind of lengthy 5-tech and a 3-4, so it may not be an ideal fit for the Bengals, but he's an interesting guy, I think, to get into a D-line rotation and see what he can do at the next level, because he's incredibly powerful and reads the game well and just kind of works his way to the ball.
Absolutely. Sam, I really appreciate you taking time to join us. And again, good luck with everything you guys are doing at PFF. You guys do a remarkable job. I hope everybody will check out their scouting supplement. You can get more information than you can ever imagine available. ProFootballFocus.com. Go there, check out all their content, all their grades and everything else. Whenever you see a Bengals drafted, go look up the information they have on them, because I guarantee you they have probably quite a lot on everybody that you're looking for. Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus, thank you for joining us on the Draft Spectacular.
Thanks for having me.
All right, moving on in our NFL Draft Spectacular podcast, I am pumped for the second year in a row to bring NFL writer for Sports Illustrated, Doug Farrar, on. Doug, thanks for joining.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Yeah, you know, you've got your top 50 is currently counting down almost to the end, which means, thankfully, we're almost finally to draft day. I know, you know, we enjoy looking at everybody and projecting, but we just need to get this thing over with already.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting. I'll be excited to get my life back.
For sure.
I'm sure yeah, you will, too.
Yeah, no doubt about that. No doubt about that. So you have your top 50. I saw a lot of interesting, obviously, scouting reports on your Greyhound League. Go check that out. The link is on the blog. Go get a look at that. But, you know, I'll get to a few of those in a moment. I want to start with a question that has been asked of me quite a bit, mainly because the Bengals' histories of picking players who don't really make huge impacts until a year or two down the road on purpose, whether it was last year taking Cedric Abueyi in the first round coming off an ACL, Darquez Dennard the previous year, though even though he's, you know, didn't have an injury issue, has kind of sat and learned in the background. They're not afraid to do that because they feel the depth of their roster, which brings us to Jalen Smith. At a Notre Dame, who of course had the ACL, MCL tear, he's got, you know, talking about nerve damage at the combine. Where do you think he falls, and how do you feel like teams view what he can be?
Well, for anyone who's read my SI 50, and we're talking on Friday the 15th, and number 6 goes up today. So you can pretty much tell that he's not on there, and the only reason he's not on there is because of the knee. And when you kind of have that Willis-McGahee combo, I tend to think that the further away you are from the line, the more you're able to recover from those knee injuries in a realistic sense. So I give him a chance there. It's just, you know, you have to kind of take him off the board when the injury is that severe. Miles Jack, kind of a different story because he's been essentially, there's, you know, worry about microfracture and whatnot, but he's essentially been cleared. He told me, I talked to him this week, and he told me he's doing basically everything, stopping and starting. He's doing gassers and suicides and whatnot. So kind of a different thing. Thing about Jalen Smith, and I can't yet reveal who my number one player is. It's not a quarterback because Carson Wentz is my top guy, and he was number 7. But if Jalen Smith got out of his college career without that knee injury, he would probably be my number one player on the board. I think based on his tape, pre-injury, if you factor that injury out, I think he's probably the best player in this draft class.
What is it about him that, you know, if you're talking about comparing him and Jack, what was it about him that puts you over, you know, even a guy like Jack who's getting such rave reviews?
And I think Jack is spectacular. He's in my top 3, I'll tell you that. I think what Jalen Smith does is he brings a little more punch to everything Jack does. And then you look at him as a pass rusher, and that's where I believe he sets himself apart. I mean, we know this. The NFL has changed. The three-down run-stopping 260-pound linebacker gone the way of the dinosaurs. Your average starting linebacker is playing in a nickel defense. NFL teams are using sub packages 65% of the time last year. So you have to be able to take the tight end up the seam. You have to be able to have curl flat responsibilities. You have to do delayed blitzes from any gap because the hybrid fronts are so different now. And I think Jalen Smith brings the ability to do all of those things in a full package, even better than Miles Jack. And that's why it's such a shame that he was hurt because, gosh, he would be all we would be talking about right now.
Yeah, and you wonder at what point will a team say it's worth the risk? You know, what value are they willing to give up? Is it a late one? Is it a two? I think it's kind of one of the big questions in this draft is who and when are they going to be willing to say we'll take a shot that he gets better and turns into the guy that everyone saw on tape.
Well, and you bring up a really good point about organizational philosophy. The Bengals do this. I live in Seattle. I've seen the Seahawks do it. They'll pick guys in a year and don't expect them to even make an impact at all. It's why I hate doing draft grades right after the draft, even though we all have to do it, because you don't know what teams are thinking. And with a guy like this, I mean, if he even checks out, like, above 50% and there's a good prognosis, I would be shocked if someone didn't take him in the second round. Just, okay, we'll sit this kid for a year, and then if he comes back at, you know, relatively close to what he was in college, he's just going to destroy people. So you take that risk, especially if, like the Bengals, like the Seahawks, like the Patriots, teams like that that have strong rosters from year to year, you can take those chances.
Yeah, and like we said, we've seen the Bengals do that. Certainly, I would say at 55, it would be a conversation that would be very serious inside the Bengals.
Just to interrupt, on the other hand, I mean, the Dominique Easley case. Dominique Easley was, to me, the best defensive lineman in his draft class. He comes out with the knee stuff. He doesn't rehab the right way. You know, he rubs some people in the organization the wrong way because of the way he handles the injury. So, I mean, it can go either way, and it's always a risk. Over the guy, Jalen Smith, I mean, it's going to be too enticing because, you know this, NFL personnel guys, they're also Gantt, they're card counters. They want to know that they have some sort of subterranean advantage, and picking up those injured players as they come to the upside is one of the, you know, it's one of the gambits they try to use.
Yeah, and it'll be a really interesting interesting decision, particularly for the franchises like you mentioned, including the Bengals. I want to move on to a couple of guys in your top 50 here that sparked that kind of fired off a couple of neurons in my brain regarding the Bengals. We had tons of receiver talk this year with Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu gone. So there's this group, and everyone sort of can pick their type. It seems like of these top 5, 10, whichever we want to call it, receivers, many of them are very different, and they all have, it's kind of, you can pick your poison of exactly what it is that you need. You have Laquon Treadwell all the way up at 10, and the one first thing everyone talks about with him is, okay, well, he ran the 4.63, slow, that type of stuff. You have him as high up as anybody. What is about him that stands out where you don't think, you know, that speed is just not really going to be the issue that a lot of people think it would be?
Well, a couple things about Treadwell. I mean, the straight line speed shows up as a negative issue when you get to sort of the third level, you know, 7-route, 9-route, straight go, 20 to 30 yards downfield. If he's facing a fast cornerback, he's not going to be able to separate with pure speed. He can, however, separate with hand moves. And if you watch that Ole Miss passing game, I mean, it was extremely limited at times. And I would watch, you know, replays of play. I don't have, you know, College All 22. Get on that NCAA, please, because it would help us a lot. But I'll watch, like, replays of plays where the quarterback's throwing his first read. Treadwell's a second or third read, and he is wide flipping open down the field. So he understands how to create separation with technique, with sinking into his route, with just route judgment. And, you know, going back to Jerry Rice, you know, straight line speed is not the only thing. If it was, Darius Hayward Bay would be a 10-time Pro Bowler. That hasn't happened. So I think with the speed thing, you know, it's one of those things that gets oversold at times. And I think with Treadwell, you just have to watch 2 or 3 games and say, okay, he was open there, he was open there, he was open there. And the quarterback didn't see it. Or the passing game didn't factor in that third read where he was on the backside, he was playing X ISO, and they were throwing the trips right, and he wasn't even looked at, and he created an opening. So, you know, in his case, I think he's a big guy. He can make contested catches. I do think Josh Doctson is better at the contested catch thing, but overall skill set, I think Treadwell's and you can make arguments for a lot of guys. I love Sterling Shepard. I mean, and I actually mocked him to Cincinnati in my mock draft a couple weeks ago. But, I think Treadwell, as long as you have a speed guy, I mean, and, you know, because when you already have A.J. Green, it's kind of interesting because Mohamed Sanu had the same thing. People, oh, he's not fast. And then you got to watch his tape and see how he actually does it.
Yeah, no doubt. One of the things interesting with Treadwell as well, with the Rams trade, I mean, that was a team that a lot of people thought they would be taking receiver if they didn't move and get a quarterback somewhere. So if they were still sitting there at 15, Treadwell would be a very strong possibility to maybe go to them. Now there's a shot that maybe that trade makes him slip down further. Who knows? Maybe Tennessee takes one or somebody jumps in, but it could be interesting to see if that affects where Treadwell ends up going in this draft. If he does slip back closer to that 22, 23, 24 group, that's all wide receiver needy. It'd be interesting to see what happens there. I want to move on to a couple other guys, and we talked a little bit on this podcast about pass rushers, and the Bengals looking for some with Marcus Hunt and Will Clark, so far non-productive in backup roles, Ryan Carlos Sumlip and Michael Johnson. Emmanuel Ogba out of Oklahoma, Noah Spence out of Eastern Kentucky is a guy, controversial, of course, former Ohio State and ends up in Eastern Kentucky. You have him at 10. Those two in particular are some of your primary edges. Start with Spence. Why? What it is that you like about him so much? And are you concerned? Is there a concern? How much issue is there with the off-the-field stuff with him, you think?
You know, I think he was a kid. I think he did some dumb stuff. I think he saw his life flash before his eyes professionally. And when he got to Eastern Kentucky, I hadn't heard a word about any reoccurrences. And, you know, if you have a predilection to doing stupid things, maybe you just get it out of the way early. But this, I mean, I don't think he's a Johnny Manziel or whatever. And when you put the tape on with Spence, I mean, gosh, there's so much to like. I hesitate when I compare college players to like 10-time Pro Bowlers, but there are aspects of his game that bring to mind DeMarcus Ware. Now, he doesn't have the dip and rip that Ware did, but he's incredibly fast off the brace, and he is so strong. And I'm not talking about the Eastern Kentucky opponents. You know, I've watched him at Ohio State, too, so I've seen that. And, I mean, put it this way, if I'm picking a pure pass rusher between Spence and Bosa, I'm taking Spence. I think Spence could be, in the right scheme, the best pure edge rusher in this draft because he brings a lot of run-stopping power to the table as well. You know, when you're talking about a guy like Ogba, that's pure speed off the edge. He might be a rotational player because I don't see that same thing against the run. And I think he's going to have to develop, and it's one of my pet peeves with the way pass rushers are taught because so many of these guys don't know how to use their hands. They haven't developed inside counters. You know, they don't know dip and rip yet. But Ogba, I mean, to me, he could be, when you talk about the Bengals' philosophy of waiting a year, he would be an ideal candidate for that. Get him in there with his natural ability. Teach him what you need to teach him. Obviously, they have the staff to do that. And, you know, let him loose in 2017. That might be the way to go for him.
Yeah, and I think that's what they're looking for. I mean, when you have starters like Johnson and Dunlap and you know, even guys like Clark and Hunt that are trying to, with one last ditch, trying to hang on and make their mark, a guy that can come in and play occasional pass rushing third downs, it's very similar to what they did when Dunlap and that Atkins and that group first came in. They called them the Fisher-Price group, and they would bring them in on third downs and let them just eat. Early in their career, and then eventually ended up unseating everybody, and now they're perennial Pro Bowlers and all that type of stuff. But
especially in a Bengals, if you have a speed guy off the edge, like a real, because they have, you know, Dunlap's more, he can do both, but a pure speed guy, just because Geno Atkins is going to bring up double teams all the time, just have him rushing it. I was always surprised Seattle didn't do that with Bruce Irvin. Just find the hole and go. Make it elementary at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely an interesting draft, and again, for anybody that hasn't seen it, make sure you go make sure you go to SI.com and check out Doug's Top 50, scouting reports, excellent stuff, sitting down with a lot of these guys, and going through their game, and so as you kind of research who you think the Bengals are going to take, go make sure you check that out. Fantastic work again, Doug, and hey, appreciate you joining me, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Always a pleasure, man. Thanks.
All right, again, huge thanks goes out to Dane Brugler, Sam Monson, and Doug Farrar for their time and diving into all those draft topics. We are almost there, less than 2 weeks away from finally getting to the draft. We can, oh my goodness, just stop projecting and analyzing, pick the guys, and let's talk about how it goes forward now that we know the schedule. This is the last big hurdle to really get us towards all the small stuff we go through to get to training camp, and it's time. I want to let you know, sneak peek what we got coming, big 9-part series previewing the Bengals draft strategy is going to be coming your way. That's starting next week. We'll be counting down by draft need and eventually end up at number one. I bet you can guess where we end up there right as we get up to draft day. One more mock draft. Thank God I'm completely dead inside from doing three. But one more coming. I'm going to do the 7-round mock draft. No, I'm not picking all every single pick by every single team, but all 7 Bengals picks I'm going to sort of project so you can look at positions, maybe some sleepers, things like that. We'll get that coming. Of course, Jim and I, well, we'll bring back Jim. We'll talk one more podcast before the draft about specifically what we expect for that weekend. And of course, then we'll have the podcast wrapping it up as soon as we get done with bringing in all the players, talking about all the picks and all the fallout that comes from that. We'll have that for you after the draft is concluded. Remember, draft April 28th to the 30th there in Chicago, but we will be it bunkered up here in Cincinnati where all the coaches and Duke Tobin and the family and everybody else is hanging out making the picks. But and so until then, I got to go with the song, of course, and there's only one song I could think that everybody in the Bengals draft room is talking about right now. It just keeps repeating me. It's just LL Cool J. He just keeps saying, who do you love? Are you for sure?
Style, got a Mac and funny style. He ain't watching you, he rather watch his money pal. Can't protect treasures when it's in a glass house. Soon as he turn the corner, I'ma turn it out full blown. Footing in the six with the chrome, yo B. Why you leave your honey all alone with me? Just because you blessed with cash doesn't mean your honey won't let me finesse that. You see, the moral of the story is a woman need love. The kind your so-called players never dreamed of. You got to try love, can't buy love. If you play your hand, then it's bye-bye love.